Las Culturistas is brought to you by the Forever Dog Podcast Network.
Find us and other great podcasts at www.foreverdogpodcasts.com.
And if you're loving what you're hearing, subscribe to us at Apple Podcasts.
And while you're there, please write us a nice review and give us a 5-star rating.
Thank you all!
Thank you all!
Ding dong, Las Culturistas calling!
I am in this room right now with the glacier. You are ice cold.
No, I'm not.
What is going on? Is it the weather?
It's the weather. And, you know, I'm a little tired and I'm in this, you know, not low place, just like, I just took a soul cycle class. And so I'm just like a little, you know, endorphined out. I'm crashing a little
bit. That's okay. Not everyone is always on.
But I'm saying I'm on. I'm definitely, fuck you. I'm on.
I'm not saying you're not on. I'm saying now I understand. You've released a lot of physical energy.
Exactly. And I'm in a very good place right now. And I'm just, you know, for me and my body doesn't manifest that in like a let's go. So I'm not being a glacier. Please refrain from calling me a thing that's melting, honestly. And that's sad. And how dare you elicit that image? How dare you?
Do you think that the listeners of Las Culturistas will feel sad when they hear the word glacier?
Yes.
And then they think about across the world, what's happening?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's something that we have to fix in our lifetime.
What would you do about global warming?
I would, just tax carbon, baby.
Mm-hmm. Now,
What would you do?
Me?
Yeah.
I would write Leonardo DiCaprio a letter.
Yeah, oh, yeah, and because he's the one. He's the key.
I would write him a personal letter because I feel that he has the influence and the power, honey, to do something about this.
Yeah.
And also, at the bottom of the letter, I would include a postscript. And that would say, P.S. postscript. I feel that you could reduce your carbon footprint as well.
Because
I have to say, this is not the moment for I Don't Think So, Honey. That does come at the end of the episode,
right?
Classically. But I Don't Think So, Honey, Leonardo DiCaprio, and him being all Inconvenient Truthed.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you see him on his fucking yachts on yachts on yachts with all these models.
Sure.
So, and you have to imagine that man takes a private jet. He doesn't fly commercial airline.
He's not. Oh God, there's this insane woman on the internet who
has
all of her trash from the past 5 years in a jar because she just does not want any waste. And even God bless her, she's doing God's work, but
she has all her shit in one jar.
It's so annoying.
It sounds so annoying. Beyond annoying, it sounds not realistically feasible.
Not realistically feasible, but you know what is realistically feasible? Let's talk about the setup real fast,
because yes.
This is a new little rig, a new little setup.
I think that's why you're so dropped in.
But I'm so comfortable right
now. That's what it was.
I'm so excited.
I sensed a different energy, and I was like, oh, now I don't understand. He's not being the glacier. He's merely being dropped in.
I'm dropped in.
Because tell us all where we are sitting.
We are back in hot engineer Ronnie's apartment, and he has laid out the couch.
Yes.
And Matt and I are just luxuriating on the couch.
You could call us splayed out.
We're splayed out. And honey, across from us.
Yes, we have two.
We have two guests.
Fabulous guests. Now, let's introduce one.
Yes.
Let's first introduce prior guests of the show.
Yes.
You can catch them every Wednesday night at Club Cumming doing the amazing Cabernet Cabaret.
With Catherine Cohen.
The luminous Catherine Cohen.
Luminous.
And this is Henry Kapersky. Hello, Henry.
Hi. So happy to be back here, you guys.
This is historic. This makes you our second return guest, maybe third if you count Pat.
Right.
Which we don't.
Welcome back, Henry.
Thank you.
Now,
I'm honored.
Before we move on, Henry actually told me he wanted to really make a point.
Yes.
Of being here. He says he has something to say.
Oh my God. Okay.
Wait.
This is when what you said you've been getting a lot of questions.
Oh yeah. So I'm often talked about on this podcast.
Yes.
Sometimes my name is used, sometimes it isn't. And people make a lot of assumptions about things. And so I think we should just say right now that Matt and I dated for like 2 years and a couple months, and we broke up in May.
I'm just hearing about this now.
Oh, wow.
And we still live together.
Mm-hmm.
And it has brought us together even more in a friend way.
Yes.
And we've done a lot of forgiving and wonderful things and growing together.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want you all to know what's going on so you don't have to make assumptions. Or
so basically Henry's saying he is now accepting new strange tale.
New strange tale.
He wants to make it short. No, that's what you did.
Don't
I don't think so, honey.
It that way. That's not what he's saying. He just wants to clarify. And, you know,
no, things are good.
I wish there was, you know, I wish Shonda Rhimes was in the room with you all for the months since the breakup, just so she could study what post-breakup life is, because she gets it wrong.
She gets it really wrong. You know? And honestly, not everything is such drama, Shonda. It's actually rule number 12 of culture.
Not everything is such drama, Shonda. Now, we're so happy to have Henry back, and thank you for clarifying.
Thank you, Henry. Uh-huh. But the main event today.
Yes.
Now, this is such an exciting episode for Bon and I. Another person oft mentioned on the pod.
Absolutely.
Now, the credits, they come rolling down. Come on, Bo and Yang.
She is an alumna of our amazing, if I do say so myself,
you could say
musical sketch comedy group Pop Roulette. She's a dear, dear friend. We've known her, we've known her when she's known us, when we love her so much. What else, Matt?
So this is like the big event that's going to be happening. I've been hearing the trades. Do you read the trades?
I read the trades.
So the trades are saying that December 4th, it's Monday, December 4th at 7 p.m. at the Duplex. This is the event of the season, the winter event of the season. Yes. You know how in 2006 when Dreamgirls came out, that was the event of the season?
That was the event of the season.
This is the event of this season.
Absolutely.
So this is called Amanda Schechtman Hates to Sing. It's going to be a cabaret performance. Everyone's going to be very, very lucky to be there.
I am so excited. I'm going to be there with bells on.
Oh, I'll be there without bells on because I don't want to distract from what's happening on stage.
I'm so sorry.
Bells make noise famously. That's actually rule number 20 of culture.
Bells make noise famously. Now, I can't wait for this show. It's going to be so fantastic. This person has the singing voice, the banter, the charm to fill a whole stadium, and she's going to fill out the Duplex, and it's going to be really special.
Because the Duplex, famously, much smaller than a stadium, yes. And so she'll definitely be able to fill it out.
Absolutely.
Because if she could fill open a stadium,
it's
honey.
It's just a matter of scale.
It's just a matter of scale, and taking up a tiny 5'2" of scale in this room right now is Amanda Schechtman.
Hello.
Did I get that right, 5'2"?
You gave me 2 inches.
Oh. Yeah.
So then your documentary is just going to be Amanda Schechtman, 5'5".
Just five.
Five.
Yeah.
Five.
What would your main struggle be in your Netflix documentary? Because hers is famously, you know, fibromyalgia.
Yeah, just living.
Living. Yes.
It would just be like the histrionic way that I just like can't.
Yes. That you just can't,
yeah,
period.
I just can't, period.
Well, before we got on the air, you guys were talking about how you get sick often.
Newly.
Newly.
Yeah.
You would say it within the last year and a half?
Yes.
What's been the lifestyle change? Can you track it back to a lifestyle change?
Yeah, definitely. I started working with kids a lot.
Damn.
They're fucking crazy.
Yeah, no, they're not good.
Oh my God.
Kids,
I don't want them personally.
I'm still, the jury's still out for me. That's awful. That they're germ infested little pockets of flesh.
I'm like, they can't help it,
no,
you know.
No,
and
no.
So I don't fault them for it, but do I get mad at them?
Like, yeah, of course.
Well, of course.
Because I'm like, take your hand out of your butt, and then don't also put it in your
mouth.
I mean, yeah.
But like, okay, I don't think the onus is on you to make a lifestyle change to be like a wipes person. Like, I don't want you to carry wipes.
I hate that. I've never been that person. Yeah. I don't want to. I'm not like a, ooh, like, germs, that's yucky. I've never been that
sure.
person.
So then what's the, who's going to budge here?
I'll tell you who must
Something's
budge.
Something's got to give.
It's got to be the parents.
Yes.
I think so. And I love blaming them. So yes.
No, I will say this. The helicopter parents, it's like, why are you helicopter about everything except your kids' hands are all in their butt?
It's the new age way of parenting.
Yeah.
Good bacteria. Let them play in the trash.
No,
it's
no, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, that's,
those people are a seminar away from being anti-vaxxers. And I've said that same thing about people who believe so much in astrology.
It's a tone shift away.
It's a tone shift away. Ew. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Can you imagine if you came to lunch as a youngster and you went into your
ass?
If you went into your lunchbox and pulled out your, you know, thermos of soup, something, you know, whatever. I used to do soup in a thermos.
Soups in a thermos.
Did you do soup in a thermos?
No, but okay. I can imagine you. With
yeah.
The soup
well, because I was telling Henry the other day when I was little, I was afraid of. I was kind of like I had like a food fear. Like I didn't want my lunch to sit in the box all day and then open it later.
Oh, totally. I had anxiety about that too. Yeah. When the lettuce would turn to like a darker color, I was like, my mom's. A bit.
No, but I will say, it's like, especially cold food. When food is cold and sitting around, I'm like, no, that's bad. So there was something about the hot soup in a thermos. Thermoses, by the way, it's rule of culture number 19. Thermoses are unbelievable.
Thermoses are unbelievable.
The way they can keep something hot.
Of course. Mm-hmm. It's science.
Yes. So listen, what was I saying? Can you imagine? You reach into your lunch... And next to you, some kid who's probably named something cool like Brooklyn, like reaches out and pulls out a kombucha.
And I mean, I know we just established that you don't want children, but you would feed your child kombucha. You're a kombucha bitch.
Well, I no, actually, we used to have this disagreement when we were dating. Mm-hmm. I said our kids will drink soda,
and I say our kids will not drink soda. Right. Soda is. Poison.
Yes.
Soda is
poison. Juice is poison, famously.
Henry famously says juice is poison.
Juice is poison as well.
Okay, Amanda, and feel free to be as cryptic as you want, because obviously this is like professional. But now these kids, what's your approach to
them? Oh, I have
a
very famous kid in one of my classes.
Go on.
Okay, talk.
I feel like I can't say we can't talk about
specific children, but let's, can we at least broadly and not negatively at all? I mean, we don't want to let.
Let's get into the kid without getting into the kid.
And the famous one.
Yeah.
No. Just the kids in general.
Oh, yeah.
Just all kids across all you know, contexts. How is your approach to kids in general? Like, are you stern? Are you warm? Like, what would you say is your approach?
I think that the key with kids, and a lot of parents don't get this, is treating them like they're people.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds so dumb and simple, but like there's this thing that I've watched happen where, and especially around these parts, is like there's this tendency to tell children that they are, or make them feel that they are extremely special.
Yes.
Mm.
And I've seen a lot of spoiled kids. There's like a Brooklyn spoiled and a Manhattan spoiled. Oh. And they're two different branches of spoiled.
Describe the difference.
So, right.
So the Manhattan spoiled is your sort of like, you know, stereotypical TV, you know, archetype of like the, you know, bully or like the mean. I babysat a child actor for a while. That was a trip.
Brother.
And he was a Manhattanite. And he once turned to me and asked me, am I more like Leonardo DiCaprio or Charlie Chaplin?
Jesus Christ.
Of course, the two types.
Yeah, you know, which is just so alarming because it means at some point somebody was like, you know, you remind me of these people.
And he's trying to get to the bottom of like, what's my sensibility as a
trying
to fucking
scary.
Five girls.
So he was like seven, which is just the worst age amongst a 7-year-old boy. Pass.
No, I agree.
Pass.
Yeah.
It's like a little like preview of their adulthood.
Right.
It's like
right.
Here's what's coming. But he would say to me, you know, like, what jobs have you booked?
Oh my God.
Like the horror of facing my. It was like this little like embodiment of my like years of. Rejection. It was so bad.
But also, like, just hearing that from anybody is atrocious. But
oh,
like,
sure.
But
yeah.
Just, like,
I had to teach him what the word humble meant. Like, physically be like,
oh my God.
Well, humble me. I was like, is this real? So there's the Manhattan spoiled, which is like the money. Upper West and the uniform, whatever. The Manhattan, or the, sorry, the Brooklyn spoiled.
Yes.
Is
more righteous.
Yes. And it's this kind of like, give them freedom, give them space.
Yeah.
Like and so what they do is they take their freedom and they just think like, you know, they feel victimized.
Or they just
often.
Don't,
which, you know, sure. Am I gonna tell a child that's telling me that everybody hates them and nobody likes me that's not really happening? I would never denounce that or belittle that, but it's not necessarily really happening. It's their perception of like, it's this kind of the allergies, it's all a part of it.
Yeah,
this is my issue, you know, and
it's like they're just self-pathologizing already.
Exactly.
Ew.
Exactly.
I mean, is this something that, like, is this a thing that a lot of kids are coming to you with? Is people don't like me, everybody hates me, because that never leaves you.
No.
We should tell them that.
There was one instance of that. But again, it was like, I know the child, and I think it was stemming from a place of that not necessarily really happening.
Yeah.
But being clear, or it being obvious that was their perception of, because I've seen the way they interact with their parent, who is just so like, oh my, like, sweet baby. And it's just, there's a babying that
happens.
Totally.
But yeah. I wonder, like, I would be that parent. Like, I would try to resist that so,
totally.
So much. But
I would be that.
I would just be like, oh, you're the best thing in the world, you know?
And it's so insane to, like, make any criticism about any parent at, like, this age and this point in my life, because I have no fucking clue.
In these political times.
And in these times, honey.
Everyone's just so scared and hugging their kids, you know?
Oh, I had to teach the day after.
No!
And we were doing an Annie-themed class. It was like a mini musical class. And we were doing Annie, and it was a class of only girls. And like, we sang like, "The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow."
Oh, God.
And it was just like, oof. Me and my co-teacher, we were just like, tear. It was just,
that
it was
goes
such
in,
a
that goes
tough
in the book.
One.
That goes in the book.
You know, that's
and they, and they all had opinions about, you know, that they have these liberal parents, so they just, I think it's so fascinating. They have this like menacing image of our president.
I taught schools sometimes, and I was doing that. I was something for Story Pirates, and I was like strolling around the halls waiting for my thing to start, and I was early, and they had artwork up on the wall, and it was actually a school in North Carolina.
Oh, boy.
And on the wall, it was just prior to the election, and it was like their hopes and dreams for the upcoming school year, and it was like, I hope that Donald Trump is not elected president.
Yeah.
And that was up like a couple times, references to Trump, and like, it's true, like, kids. Like in Story Pirates, like, you go out into the audience and you get suggestions from the kids, and they were obsessed with Trump.
Yeah.
And that's like, it was this thing they were thinking about. And
it's
a
buzzword. Yeah.
Right.
It's just
and
around.
I do wonder what that felt like to be this 7, 8, 9-year-old kid who's, you know, fixated on this thing, which is Donald Trump, who's not a person to them. He's just this thing in the news, like the way Lewinsky was for us. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
just something that exists out there in the world, and you don't understand it. But to then be told so for so many months, like, if Donald Trump becomes president, that's bad. That's bad. Hear all this doomsday imagery, and be a 7, 8, 9-year-old kid, and then get told when you wake up in the morning that Donald Trump was elected.
Yeah,
that's freakish to think about.
Yeah, it's like there's a cloud of fear. I don't know. I don't like to think about that.
Oh yeah, well, because they're
I'm
so
upset
young.
Now.
No. Well, I will say, we're talking about, you know, the children. The
yes.
children, they will listen.
They
the
will.
Children will listen.
Wow, maybe that's like a perfect segue, actually.
I mean,
so Amanda, we're going to ask you the question that we ask everyone that comes on our show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this question is the central question of Las Culturistas. And we ask, you know, our listeners this at home, too. Like, maybe, I don't know, in your 5-star review of Las Culturistas on iTunes, you can drop what your culture that affected you and made you want to take a step in a cultural direction was. Just think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But Amanda, we're going to ask you that question right now.
What was the culture that made you say, culture is for me?
Defining culture.
Can it be like a 3-part? It's like the
it
intersection
can be a
of
10-part.
Three things.
Absolutely.
Because okay. I've been thinking about this because I knew it was coming.
You were coming. It was on your Google Cal.
Yes. Alert. Okay. It's like the intersection of Long Island Jewish American princess culture and in relation to also like the way those people respond to theater and being close to the city and all of that, right?
Yes.
Like with a droplet of the fact that my mom's a hairdresser. Okay.
Great.
Yes.
Great. So that's
that's
in
like
the same lane.
That's the same lane.
Okay.
Okay. Diva. Divas culture. And all that that falls under that umbrella.
Absolutely.
So, like, just all of the shit that comes with that.
Big talent, big attitude,
the pathos,
big
and also and the ego, as well as the vocalization. Like, it's all in there, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, Bowen will like this one, I think.
wow.
Like, mid 2000s. Indie girl angst.
Yes. Absolutely.
That is her.
So
that
is her.
Aughts. Okay.
And like the Muppets.
Just the Muppets for good measure. Yeah. That's, I think that is a breakdown, is such an accurate breakdown of Amanda.
I mean, we would go to Amanda's.
Nothing is not self-aware, honey.
We would go to Amanda's house and they whip out the home videos. And let me tell you, that was a trip.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. I've been talking about this lately because it's sort of like been on the back of my mind
as you're doing the show. Yes. Amanda Shekman hates to sing on December 4th.
Yes. And the home videos for me are such a mind F because it's always like it's so fun to have the experience of like, you know, if like I bring my boyfriend to my house and like I'm like, oh, let's like pop in these home videos. Like, this is gonna be so funny. Wait till you see like the dynamic, the relationships. It's so revealing. Uh-huh. It's funny. And I literally always leave like I just came from like
like you're physically exhausted after watching it, yeah.
I'm just like, that was not what I thought it would feel like.
Well, just watching a little version of yourself that is inside you still to this day, that's like,
oh
no, raw, like owning the room, like, yeah, there's they exist in me too, hon.
I know.
It's just a weird, weird mirror that's being held up to you, but also like just the fact that those home videos exist, and I've seen a couple from you. No, specifically the ones that I've seen of you in your school musicals is the intersection of Long Island Jewish American Princess and how they respond to theater meets
hairstyling. You
know, hairstyling.
My mom did the hair for the show.
Yes.
Yeah, she fucking
she did.
Killed it.
Jamie. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
so there's a video of, where is that? Is that from Ragtime?
It was Ragtime.
Okay, back to before from Ragtime. And fucking Amanda is like, you have this updo, which is insane. And literally, what are you, 16 in that video?
Yeah.
But it's a 50-year-old woman on stage. Like,
and I was always like that.
Yeah, just an old soul.
Yes.
Did you play a lot of the older characters in the plays?
Diva,
I was always
Diva.
Playing mom, matronly, sort of. But not matron, like... I was, you know, it's the difference between like Golda and Yenta. Like, I was the Golda. I was the like mother, but in an iconic way. I mean,
the mother in an iconic way.
Rule number five of
culture.
But I also
that's the title of that.
You know, I also was sort of. I did have my ingenue moments, but like not real. Like it was like brassy ingenue.
Princess Omner.
Like she's not an ingenue.
No. She's character.
She's character.
She's a character.
Yes. So yeah, I did sort of fill that space weirdly when I was a very, very young. And I was always like that. I was just very old. Oh my God.
Yeah. But can I say one thing about, there's a good home video of Henry.
Yes. Oh, please. Yes.
Which is Henry is smiling and bopping his head at a picnic table, eating a hot dog. And his dad is taking the video and he goes, Henry, did you pray yet? And Henry's just like, looks at the camera, and Henry's dad goes, I don't think you did. And then it ends.
Oh my God.
Because you hadn't prayed, had you?
I don't think I had. I wasn't a believer when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think I ever
truly believed.
Yeah, or in the way that my parents did.
Of course.
Religious? Were they taking you to
temple?
Temple, church, whatever?
I had sort of what I think is probably a similar experience to a lot of people in that area, which is like you're super Jewish for the sake of face, showing face, and then you like have your bat mitzvah, and they're like, we never want to talk about this ever.
Literally the same,
socially religious, and but then completely secular.
Absolutely,
it was like so the biggest deal that we go to church every week, and then I got my confirmation, and then literally we never went again.
Yeah. And I think that I have some opinions about this, but I think that religion is, you know, whatever. I won't get too much into that, but when you're growing up, I do think. And I think this especially of Judaism, that it's a nice sort of like basic framework for like being a good person.
Yeah.
And like, you know, especially in Jewish culture, there's a lot about like you know, there's a lot of guilt and bullshit, but there's also like a good amount of triumph and sort of like it instills a sense of, I don't know, celebration a little bit more than I think some of the guilt that's associated with other religions.
That's what appealed to my sister when she converted.
Totally.
Was like, it's not really a religion about shame or punishment or anything. It's not anything punitive. It's always about
remembering
and being a good person and leaving the world in a better place than when you came.
Totally.
And I was like, oh yeah, like that does make sense. I've talked about this a lot, but
and themes,
and the folklore in Judaism, and I think there's a lot of like music and there. Yes, I love some of the traditions in Judaism. I'm really into some of that for sure.
And also bat mitzvah themes.
Oh sure. What was yours?
That was in my life. Woof. My theme was. Now, this is very complex, but it was Broadway.
I don't understand.
I'll explain it to you another time.
I was going to say, like, that's, like, the perfect, like, that, like, it's not specific, but it is.
It's Broadway.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, the theme's going to be Broadway, and you're like, okay. At the time, everyone was like, yeah, she picked Broadway. But now it's like, that's amazing.
Okay, so.
It's so funny. There's nothing funnier.
So zero in on, like, how this was, like, the theme was applied.
Okay, I love talking about this. So, first I'll tell you just a sort of aesthetic element is that each of my tables, and like insane to think that just to have tables at 13 years, like ego around it is so wild.
Was it a candle celebration as well? Now to light my 11th candle.
Of course, yeah I did all the things. I had the candle lighting, the montage, I sang Reflection from Mulan.
God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Oh my God.
I made my friends sit down and watch me sing Reflection, which is like a sort of a dark song. You know, it's just...
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's not celebratory.
No, it's like who am? It's an identity crisis.
Yeah,
also not Broadway.
not at all.
But thank you for bringing Asian culture into your.
Oh my God! You know that was my goal.
That's like when I think it was Bill Clinton got inaugurated. Aretha Franklin came up and sang I Dreamed a Dream from Les Mis.
Which is a
devastating, like, essentially, like, the last rattle cry of, like, Fantine. And, like...
People don't understand context.
No.
But...
Anyway, the aesthetic element was that I had on my tables my centerpieces. I went to some, like, place in Long Island that did like moments of stuff, and I like, you know, and so they were all playbills through the years.
I love that.
But I had seen this at another girl's bat mitzvah.
Love that.
You know, right. And of course, like in classic, just like my family, my life fashion, it was like, it was watered down, quite there.
Yeah. It's when you look at a Pinterest board and then you want to do the thing and then it's
and
not
then it just never turns out that way. Exactly. And like my dress was the same way. It was like custom made, but it fell apart like halfway through. You know, I'm always trying. But like the centerpieces were playbills, but instead it was just pictures of me doing the thing that's in that playbill.
Oh!
So instead, what I wanted was like my face superimposed onto like the actual thing,
have been crazy.
Like the graphics required for that. I mean, I don't know, but what
you were needed a Bo and Yang level graphic designer.
Oh my goodness! But then what ended up happening?
What ended up happening was like hairspray. You know, and I can't. This is all demonstrative.
Right, the face.
But it's the face. So it's just me. Like, no effect, just mouth open, hands on my cheeks, close up, like, dead eyes, you know?
She's giving us a perfect Marissa Jarrett Winoker face right now.
Just cut out on the white background with the blue hair, and then...
No
effects,
hair.
But then would you have the logo of the show over it?
Yes, okay, so well I then. Had, like, hairspray at the top. The best, the tour de force, though, was... Rent, because famously
there's
Rent,
like nine of them.
There's nine of them,
and Mimi is like,
no, yeah. So it's just like the awkward 13-year-old body.
Oh,
you know, like a pink 12. Petite bateau t-shirt. You know, or 12. Yeah, I wasn't even 13 yet. You're right, and just doing all the Rent poses, but like with like minimal effort. You know, and
did you at least do Adina's screaming face? Like,
I've seen it. Yes.
Okay. Yes. Oh, I commit. That? No, I commit.
I'm sure
it was
you
entirely copied. They were all very accurate.
Okay, but listen, that's literally pastiche, and it's gorgeous. Like, I'm saying that in a good way.
Thank you so much.
It's a tribute.
It is.
Pastiche,
it's a tribute.
It's gorgeous.
I had never seen it, and I didn't know the music. But
well, I mean, speaking of Broadway, now
I think it would be a wonderful time. I think it would be a nice time to hear a song. So tell us this first song that you're going to do for us, and this is going to be included in the show on December 4th.
The story of at least, you know, my journey with this song is I have my best friend Ryan. He contacted me, or what, you know, we were just talking, and he was like, I've had a like a talent crush on this performer, Katie Thompson, for a very long time, because I saw her in the musical, in the Michael John Lacusi musical Giant at the Public like 5 years ago. And she was like Adele with like more power and but acting, and like I have such a crush on her, and I felt like she had this raw quality to her voice, and I sometimes feel like I struggle to fit into a category in terms of type and vocally, and I sort of watched her do this thing where she's actually a composer. She's like written a lot of music, and she just has this like amazing quality. So he was like, I found this video of Katie Thompson. She's singing this song. It feels so like something that comes from, that would come from your heart and mouth. And I looked it up, and I just like, I'm not often, I've sung for so long. So it's often that I'm just like, oh, I would love to like have this music in my mouth.
Yes.
So I did it at one of Henry's shows once, and
we were there.
Remember, we hosted it.
Yes, and I just felt like there was an understanding of this feeling, and that's really what I look for in songs. Is like, am I just singing, or am I getting at something that people are understanding on an emotional level? It's by Jonathan Reed Gout, who is a really talented composer in that sort of camp of contemporary musical theater composers. And I'm not a very good fan because I don't know the context, if it's from a musical of any kind. I think it's sort of just a one-off thing.
I think you're right. I think it's right.
So
yeah, my sheet music says from the album 13 Stories Down.
Yeah. And I think that, and there's some like really amazing singers on that album just doing his songs. And he has a really, some really good stuff on there. So little plug for him.
Great.
Okay. Well, this is, yeah. I mean, it's called No Reason at All.
Yes.
Now let's hear it.
I lay here in the dark, yearning for something, a tiny glance, a kind word, to give my life meaning. But you'd never know, 'cause I never show how much you've helped me to see the woman I'm longing to be. Sometimes I just need to cry for no reason at all. Sometimes I'm too tired to try for no reason at all. Sometimes I just have to learn to let go for no reason at all. I stand in the door, life passes by, and feel like I'm stuck in between the life that I want and what I can reach. It's like I'm not heard and not seen. There must be a way at the end of the day that I can help make you see the woman I long to set free. Tired to try for no reason. just have to learn to let go for no reason. Can see the things that I need to change in me, and that's a start, a place I'd rather be. But when the time comes, will I have the strength to pull myself up and see? Yeah. And sometimes I just need to cry for no reason at all. Sometimes I'm too tired to try for no reason at all. Sometimes I just have to learn to let go for no reason, for no.
Oh my God.
I mean,
Amanda Schechtman.
You, thank you for doing that on the show.
Oh my gosh.
That
thank
was
you.
Unbelievable.
That was unreal. Thank you.
It's hard to feel like I'm not just yelling.
No, 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 no. That was really like, I'm so excited for everyone that just heard that. And you don't know what it was like to be in the room.
Yes.
So what I would suggest is that you buy tickets to the show because you have an opportunity to be in the room.
Yes.
So it's, again, I'll just keep saying it. And we're going to hear two more songs, which is fucking nuts. But it's on December 4th at 7 p.m. at the Duplex. It's called Amanda Schechtman Hates to Sing. So
get your tickets at purplepass.com.
Yeah.
And really, you should be in the room.
You really should
Absolutely.
Be in the room.
You're in New York City. It's so easy to stay in, especially when it's cold. But like, you're in the greatest city in the world, and you can hear one of the greatest singers in the world.
Wow, thank you guys.
And to see her, to feel her presence is what takes it to the next level.
It's Absolutely. Really fabulous. Henry, you were also amazing on that as well.
Thank you, Henry.
And Henry also is also accompanying at the show.
Yes,
yes
so
of
you'll
course.
See Henry as well. Okay, so I do want to get into this. Now, it's called Amanda Schechtman Hates to Sing.
Yes.
Now, when I met you at NYU, mm-hmm. We did a show together. It was called The Reality Show at NYU. And we collaborated, and you had just experienced something in your life,
yes.
which I think sort of changed your life.
Absolutely.
And that was, I guess, being on a famous reality television singing show.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what went down with American Idol.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Woof. Okay, so
and I know that it is a woof.
It is a woof.
It's such
but,
a woof.
But I'm so, you know, it's been this thing that's sort of unnecessarily. I've like you know grown it into this monster in my brain, and I'm really excited to just like take the power away from it and just let it be like the stupid thing that
Good.
Happened to me.
I think, and this sounds so whatever. I think you have really come. So far from that,
thank you.
That mental
yes.
space too,
you.
You know. So yeah, go ahead and describe
you.
It.
And like you know, take the sort of things that we've talked about myself into account when I'm telling this because
right.
it's all a part of it, you know.
Right,
and
totally.
So, because singing for me was very pure,
yeah. right?
Like it was so pure
oh my
for
God.
Me.
Yes, yes.
And.
That's okay. And just before we even get into details, that's the shittiest part of all this is that someone who like has a gift, a gift of all gifts, like
but
for that to be sullied,
yeah.
but in any way.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is that dates back, that approach to what I can do mm-hmm. dates back to before the Idol experience, because I think there was a culture of you know, in our society and just the way that we treat talent, that there is a tendency to want to manufacture it and or take it and foster
make
it and harvest
it
and make
yeah.
money. Yes,
yeah.
To put it frankly, yes, make money from it. And I think that, you know, my friends and family did this to me throughout my life as well. And out of a, not a bad intention at all. But this is just, I think we've been conditioned to treat talent this way. And I do it all the time. I do it with you guys, you know, like I'll just, we'll just dish about some singer on the internet and it's no big thing. And it's like when the journey from singing being like a pure facet of music into something that we judge and you know, manipulate and all of that has been present in my life for a long time. But blah, 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 blah. So after my my freshman year of college.
Which, of course, is so easy for everyone and everyone knows exactly who they are and where they're
time.
Going.
Yeah, yeah. Know? Oh, my God.
Just a breeze. Just a total breeze. I was a mess. Oh, my gosh. I was a mess. I was sort of having in this really crazy place with my identity and I had gone on such a wild journey up until that point of knowing that I had talent, not really knowing if I want to do that, being boxed in, blah, blah, blah. And by the time that I got to applying to schools, you know, I at one point was like looking at like liberal arts colleges in like upstate New York where I could like double major in English and art. Like, you know, I was like so ready to just be like, leave me alone.
Yeah.
And then I don't know. It just the sort of feeling that what's possible, the potential that I've been sort of pumped up with my whole life.
It's harder when you know you can do it,
right?
And when people have affirmed that for the longest time,
the affirmation of just like you're special, you're amazing, you're a talent, you have a gift, and believe me, I mean, I rejected that for a while. I got into like drawing and like, you know, I was like, you know, the quiet things. But eventually it was just like, well, fuck, I'm going to go to Tisch. Like, who am I kidding? So, but when I applied to Tisch, I was like, but I want to go to the Atlantic School for Acting. You know, I really wanted to like be taken seriously. So my major was acting. It was not musical theater. I did not major in musical theater or go to that studio rather. But I went to a wonderful studio within the drama department that was an amazing place, but, you know, it was an interdisciplinary studio. So you're directing, you're designing, you're being taught how to be a whole theater artist.
Right.
Which, you know, my ego, I think, was it was so hard to imagine art for art's sake at that point. Like, it was just like, no, like, it was hard for me to let go of this idea that, like, I could really be somebody.
Yeah.
And I wanted to believe that I was somebody that could just be a theater artist and like be a downtown theater artist and do that whole thing. But I just had this moment after my freshman year where I was like, well, what if I just cash in on this idea? You know,
like
an audition for American Idol and win.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, because of course I will.
But of course, mentally, you go to that place where like, I'll do it because I think I have a shot at winning the whole fucking thing.
Yeah.
Well, you would think, and I'll get into the people that, you know, don't think like that and what happens to those poor people. So I had this thing happen my whole life of like, you have to audition for American Idol. Like, you're amazing.
Long Island it is. It's so pervasive.
You're so amazing. Of course, your voice. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. So I saw that. I don't even know how I knew, like, how it came up.
Malls.
But, right. Like, who knows? Oh, God.
But the malls in Manhattan.
It was like a poster on the American Eagle sign in the South Shore Mall.
By the way, American Idol's going to be in the city.
Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. I hate it so much. I find out that the nearest audition location was Boston. And
oh shit.
Yeah, I traveled. and I went to the stadium, the sports stadium.
Right.
Whichever one. Where
you go sing.
Where you go sing.
I think it was Gillette Stadium, but also I could 100% be making that up.
Oh my gosh. But like, I'm sure you know. And that's,
maybe.
And that's, you know,
my toxic masculinity from Ohio.
Right. So I go there and it's like tons of people and you wait around and it's a whole thing. And I was going to sing the whole thing in music at that year, I think it was 2009.
Yep.
Was like the R&B singer.
British Girls.
Who Josh Daniel on our last live show dubbed artisanal singing.
Yeah.
Artisanal singing.
Yes. Yes.
But yeah, that was, and it still is the fucking Grace Vanderwaal anyway.
Right. Like it's this thing of like, like I'm not really a good singer, but isn't it cool what I'm doing?
Yeah.
Not to, I mean, they, you know, obviously some of those women are amazing singers, and right. Who even knows what that means? The whole concept of that is what I'm worried about. but anyway, the whole thing was like Adele, Duffy, Estelle, right? Yes. You know, and Amy, of course. We just didn't know the half of it, but. All those types of singers. So that was sort of what I was bringing to the table. I was like, oh, I could probably do something like that. So I was going to sing Melt My Heart to Stone by Adele. Mm. And I was like, you would not recognize me. Mm. You know, I was like freshman 25. I had like blonde long hair and a blunt bang. Mm-hmm. And I was just like... flannel shirt, ripped stockings, boots. I went to NYU. I live in the city. Like that was what I was. Yeah, I was bringing that all to the table, and but that was really like what I was. You know, wasn't that. That's what the projection of whatever I was going through, and that's so great. And I get up to this. There are all these tents. And they have that's how many people produce this show, is that like there are like 10 of these tents and each of them have two producers in them. And you line up cattle call style, and I sing this little part of Melt My Heart to Stone, and they're kind of like squirming around, like, do we like her? And they're like, yeah, okay, we're gonna have you come back, but I want you to dress up, like look nicer, wear like a dress or a skirt or something like that. And they kind of give me this costume to come in, which is what it would have been to me, because that's not how I was naturally dressing at the time.
Right.
And I'm like, but I'm like, oh my God, like, okay, whatever you say, because like the dream is on the line.
Yeah.
And they take you into this other room where they give you a questionnaire and they kind of want to know about you. Yeah. So what's your story? What are some things that make you interesting? What's fun? What's new? What's different? Blah, blah, blah. And I have this flicker of a moment where my grandmother had passed away that year. And she was a singer. Not professionally, but she had a beautiful voice. And I was like, do I talk about my grandma?
Right, yeah, because they encouraged something. And like
it would have been a totally different result. I don't know if I'd be sitting here. Like, I don't know what would have happened if, like, that was the story I chose to tell. Right. But I was like, no, I'm not going to exploit her. Right. I'm not going to, like, use... my loss of my grandmother as some like, you know, storyline in this charade.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know it was a charade at the time. I just kind of looked at it like an interview.
Yeah.
So I put down what makes me me, right? I'm a drama student. I like to sing musical theater, but I also sing pop. I do impressions. I like can do different voices. I can talk with my mouth closed, like all these things that are just kind of what make me unique, because not everybody can do that.
Right.
Okay. So then tons of time goes by. I would say like most of the summer, I think. Again, this is all the timeline is very blurry because it's not the way it looks on TV at all.
Oh, sure. So they called you back at a later date.
Yeah. Oh, no. Okay, like, so the way they make it seem where it's like, here's everybody lined up.
Yeah, no.
I feel like I'm doing an expose on Idol. This
good.
Awesome.
That's what we want.
I love it.
So there's the way they portray it on the show is here's these like hundreds of thousands of people. And then...
Simon and Paul and Randy are waiting in the front, or car or whoever.
And it's been a long day.
Right. Oh, that's the funniest part.
Yeah.
Oh my God. So it's like months later that I go back for a second audition that's not even yet televised.
Wow. Sure.
Wow.
But this one I had like a little time to prepare for. They give you a list of songs that you can sing.
Mm.
I like go back and forth. You know, who do I want to be? How do I want to sound? What do I want to do? And it was a weird headspace for me to be in because I wasn't really living my life as a vocalist. I was living my life as an acting student.
Yeah.
So taking all of the things that I learned as like an experimental theater actor,
mm-hmm.
and then being like, what pop song do I want to sing? It was just the weirdest tension in my brain. And so they gave me this list. Here's what you can sing. And I'm like, well, I should probably stay in the same lane as this like Adele thing that's happening right now. So that song Mercy by Duffy was everywhere at the time. I'm like, that would be a good one to do, I think, because I can show off vocally and that feels like it's sort of en vogue right now. And then they say to have a backup song just in case. So I don't even know how I got there. And this speaks to like, this is so symbolic of me as a person, is that I end up going with this like Billie Holiday song that like no one knows. And I think that was like the little like indie girl in me being like, sing something fucking weird. So I have this like pop song and this like weird jazz standard that I can like riff up a bit and make it kind of cool. Again, like pure as can be, just purest, right? And I go with the whole fam, my sister, my mom, my dad. We're like, we're getting in the car, we're driving to Boston.
Yeah.
And they take you to this kind of, you know, I don't even know where we were. It was a space that had rooms.
Yes. like a conference area.
Yeah. Conventions. I don't know.
Yeah, something like
and,
that.
And my first big mistake was what I chose to wear. I wore a tube top, which just why? and, and a skirt, a high-waisted skirt that was just way too short. And like my mom's like wooden Prada like heels. It was so bizarre, the look that I strung together. And again, this hair, this 2009 bangs moment. Just like the most uncomfortable. You go through like a second adolescence in college. It's you so do. Uncomfortable and strange. And it's like out there for all the world to see. But anyway, so they take you to this space with these, you know, there were two producers before the televised one. There are three auditions before you get on camera.
It's insane. Whatever.
So just know that when you're watching The Voice, like it's all the same shit. Okay. So they take me into this room. I sing. It's good. They like it. Whatever. I'm getting moved to the next room. So then the next one is the key one, because this is the one where they fuck with you. Okay. So I go into this room and it's like these very British producers. Take that how you will. And so I sing my songs for them and they're like, you know, great for television. Great for television. Bubbly, great personality. And you know what's great about you is that you've done a lot of Broadway, it's singing, theater, but you have a very pop sound, which is great. Do that in the room. You know, really wow, do that. You have a great pop sound. It's very pop. He keeps saying that to me. He's like, it's not theatery at all. It's wonderful. And I'm like, oh, that's awesome. I'm so happy to hear that. Now I'm moving on. Okay. The producers will take you and be like, hey, can you do your like Celine Dion impression? And can you do your this? And can you talk with your mouth closed? And they'll take you in a room, interview you. And they'll have you kind of like do all these like fun things that you do. With the camera on you. And I'm thinking like, this is so fun. Like they love all this stuff that I can do. The moment where they told me that I didn't have a theatery sound is key. So just remember that.
Sure.
So then, I go into the room. I want to mention that before I went in, they had to shut down production because there was a severely autistic girl who had a breakdown she was rejected.
Oh.
So just know that that's like the fabric of this
and so
show.
Of course it just sort of, it's the fabric of the show and it also like affected you in whatever way.
Yeah, I was just like,
Is this?
Is this a scary thing? Should I be scared of what's about to happen? Because here I am thinking, everyone's loved me so far. Yep. I got pipes. I know I can do this. I've been told my whole life. Like, here I fucking go. So
That detail, though. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it's important. And it haunts me. I think about that because I just think, wow, that was like the peek behind the curtain.
Right.
So I go in. And it's them. And this was when they had the guests. They started doing the guest judge. So mine was Victoria Beckham.
Right. Famed vocalist.
Famed vocalist, Victoria Beckham. and then the other three assholes. and then, okay, so I go in and I sing Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just like, you're so dramatic. And I was like, no, that's the opposite of what the producer said. But I can't say that because no mm-hmm. one's supposed to know about 1, 2, 3 rounds of producers before this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just go to like, I'm like, what? Like, I feel so mentally
addled.
And you're, and I've been sitting around for hours all day. Yeah. This is like, you're drained. So, you know, and I haven't eaten and whatever. At the moment I like put my hand through my hair, Simon's like,
God.
And he starts mocking me.
Yep.
When I walked into the room, I forgot this. They asked me, like, it says here, I thought they would be like, so you do impressions? And I would do some impressions on camera for them there. But instead, I had said something in my interview or my little sheet of paper about how I this was, again, I'm in a weird place after my freshman year. But I say something about how I've, like, I change a lot. Like, I change my hair and, like, I like to, like, you know, I do different voices because, right, like, right, I love change. Like, I don't know. It was, like, something I threw out there.
Yeah, right. But totally. They zeroed in on it.
He made that the focal point. So yeah. He's like, says here you like to change a lot. And I was like, well, I just, you know.
Change my hair. Yeah.
Right. And I try to kind of explain this really kind of macro concept.
Yeah.
Like, and I know.
To Simon and Victoria Beckham.
And as soon as it's coming out of my mouth, I'm just like, it's over right now. Because,
oh,
like,
no.
I just saw him being like, he just cut me off and was like, okay, I don't know what you're saying. And I was like, fuck. Anyway, so I sing this song and they're like, that was horrible. That it's so theater. You sound like Judy Garland. There's so much vibrato.
What is this?
And he's making fun of me. He's doing this. And I get upset because I'm being bullied and I'm being sort of like told that I'm not a good singer, which was like, you know, it's new information.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, please, like, I've been here all day. I don't say that. But like, that's the emotion is that it's been all summer, you know?
Right.
So I'm like, let me sing another song. So they agree to let me sing another song. So I sing this weird Billie Holiday song. And they're like, again, no, too theatery. And then they're like, let's put it to a vote. Yes, 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 yes.
They wanted you to get upset.
Oh,
they knew they were going to put you on.
And
yeah.
You know, I wasn't happy when they said yes, 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 yes. I was just fucking confused.
Yeah.
So then I'm like tired and crying and I come out with the golden ticket and I'm like questioning my whole life.
Yeah.
And they have me like redo my reaction and now I'm very aware of like this whole thing.
Oh, what the fuck this whole operation.
Cuz I'm like
this
is not feeling good.
Yeah.
But you know, I committed. I said I'm going to Hollywood, so I did an academic semester where I took only music classes. I took, you know, piano lessons. I was like, voice lessons. I was like, I'm gonna go back and I'm gonna do this thing right.
You literally changed your educational path.
Yes,
for this thing.
Okay. Absolutely.
Yeah. How much time is between that audition and Hollywood?
So much.
Oh God.
I would say.
And it's in
like
your
an
head.
The entire fall semester.
Oh,
yeah.
So yeah.
December, you went.
Yes,
and
my audition with them
you.
Happened over the summer.
Right.
Yes.
So now December, you go to Hollywood.
Yes.
Okay.
And also know that in that time, that interim, I signed an insane contract.
Okay. Can you describe the contract?
I don't know.
All right. So let's not.
It's been put out there. Definitely has.
So we know, we can say, I'll say for you,
yeah.
we can say the contract basically allows them to portray you in ways that you might not agree with or be privy to,
yes.
but they're giving you this opportunity, and so you sign a contract that says you can't do anything about the way we show you.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So you go to Hollywood.
So I go to Hollywood, and I do that first round in Hollywood, and it's my one good audition. They never show it.
What did they say there?
I'm not kidding. And I know that I sound insane when I say this, but Randy Jackson said I sound like Beyonce. And I will always remember that.
That's so great.
That's so
funny. It's an insane thing
to
say to a young white woman. But
who literally, no offense to you, you sound wonderful, but not like Beyonce.
Not at all.
And this is Randy Jackson, you know, music producer. Who knows Beyonce?
But this is the thing about this show is that it all felt like it was more theatrical than anything I was doing at school. It was like nobody is saying what they mean. It was so choreographed.
And who are the judges now? It's Randy,
I
Simon.
I think I had, and you, then it was
Cara. Cara DioGuardi.
Yes, it was those three, but then they also had Ellen.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Yes.
Oh, right.
Okay. So,
famed vocalist.
So then that round goes well. And
that
then,
one goes extremely well. They don't show it. I'm like, oh my God, I'm moving on. Then it's the group round.
Okay, famous group rounds.
Is just as exhausting and horrifying
it's
as
horrible.
They make it.
Everyone
appear.
Forgets their lyrics because.
Because you stay up all night, yep. Because you're. You literally have to be there like the next morning, and they give you the songs like the night before, so they set you up for failure. And the other thing that they did was they were like, we had choices of songs to sing. Three of them were normal, like easy songs, or two of them, whatever how many there were, and one of them was The Sweet Escape by Gwen Stefani. And of course everyone's like, not doing that one.
Yeah. But, I like the wonderful one, the phone, the one, the
but, and like in retrospect, of course, yes. Like the plot of that episode was no one can get these lyrics. Like,
yeah,
you know,
because those aren't words.
They're not words. I can do it for you perfectly, and I will.
And now I can do it. I can do it too.
But, so, okay. The first messed up thing is that they're like, choose your groups. And it's like chaos because this is huge. Who you end up with is like all a part of how this goes. Right.
Yeah.
So I look around. I haven't talked to many people. I don't know what's going on. And I see this guy. He's like from Long Island. We met because we're from the same place. And I was like, him. Okay. So I go to him and he's with two other guys. So suddenly I'm like, okay. I could work with this. It's like three big dudes and me. Like, that's like a fun thing to kind of like show. And so then they have this moment where they sit us all down, the producers, and they're like, who's doing this song? And everyone's like, me. Who's doing this song? Who's doing The Sweet Escape? Crickets.
No, nobody, yeah.
And then, and I think everyone's just dumber because people are so vulnerable.
And tired,
and they're just like, whatever you say. So they're like, really? No one's doing The Sweet Escape. The judges are going to want to hear that one. Or like they say something along those lines that feels like,
maybe we should do it.
Right. So we're like, oh, let's do the subversive, like, let's do the thing that no one's expecting and do The Sweet Escape. That's so fun. So we do The Sweet Escape. We're like, I'm like choreographing with three grown men at 1 a.m.
They make you all like dance a little bit. No.
I went without my family because I was like, I'm doing this.
And
I had no support. I mean, so all the confidence goes out the window. You know, of course, we get up there and we're like, no one remembers. My whole group gets eliminated.
Oh.
While I'm in L.A., I put on the TV one night, or rather, I got some texts that said a bunch of stuff like, oh my God, Amanda, this is so exciting, ba, ba, ba. Because, sorry, go flashback. I when they showed the Boston auditions, they didn't show me. So when I went to Hollywood, I thought I got off scot free. I was like, oh my God, they're not going to show my audition. Like, this is amazing. I have a fresh start.
But this was a clip show.
They did a best of show.
And you were on that.
And I was on that. Oh, and I was blindsided.
And when you were in LA while it was happening? Oh my God.
Right after you got eliminated?
I think it was before. But I might as well have been eliminated because when I saw the audition.
Oh, you knew it wasn't like a winner's audition. Yeah.
That audition.
So how did they? What
was a trauma that I'm still dealing with?
How did they make you look?
Really unwell.
Yeah.
Well, or just too much, like just a mess of a person.
I mean, as someone who's not you, who's seen it, I will say they edited you into a dramatic theater kid.
Yes, like which I understand.
Like
it's
was,
their job.
It was just clips of Amanda like doing the impressions and talking with the mouth closed and like saying that she acts
and like
then,
these things that Amanda would not necessarily offer up front to. Someone she's just getting to know, but the edit was, by the way, I can do impressions, I can sing with my mouth closed.
Yeah.
It was
right.
Like, what is going on?
And then also the really telling thing is they show your audition and they don't show you singing Mercy.
So this is the other thing is that they, in the editing, they show me starting with Good Morning Heartache.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Which
not, did not happen.
Did not happen. It started with Mercy. So they didn't show Mercy. They just, I was, had already been told you're not getting through, and I was emoting when they start my audition.
Yeah.
Which is brilliant editing. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, at, it just, it was, I had a teacher, or she was a sort of a head of a department mm-hmm. in college, who, when I went back to school and was just a shell of a human, I had to take a whole semester off, which because I did that, I took the leave of absence right. because I thought, well, what if I make it?
Yeah.
Then I was just living at home while all my friends were like at school and doing all the things, and went through a lot with that, you know, taught myself to play an instrument, like, you know, because I needed to like get a sense of grounding after being portrayed. I was like, oh, I'm a nightmare, and all the things Jesus. I feared about myself are true, which of course, you know, now I know that's not true.
And no. this
smoke
was,
and mirrors, but I was 19 years old.
It yeah. was season 9.
Yes.
So and that's that sounds like a later season. It was actually the season that lead to Wise
right,
one
it's
or
sort
whatever.
Of a forgotten
right.
season.
And who really cares? But at the time, it's like you look at the ratings and it's like, oh, 25
Huge.
Million
yeah.
people watched
right.
it. So
right.
then you're
it's,
like,
it's public shaming.
Holy
it's public
shit. Yeah, right. Yeah.
But I had this advisor or this person tell me, I think one of the biggest challenges for you getting through this is accepting that that person is a part of you.
Right.
And it was so hard to hear. Mm-hmm. But in a way, it's like, I think she sort of had this foresight of me in the future reclaiming this and being like, able to laugh at it and think that it's ridiculous.
Because I remember when we first met, I always, like, when you shared this with me, I was like, you know, well, you just gotta laugh at it.
And a lot of people have that
but,
reaction.
But
yeah.
that is, like, that is,
it's simplistic.
It's yeah. not easy to get there.
No.
Because, you know, there's also these things in your mind which are like, I take myself seriously and I look like a joke. The biggest show in the world made
which
me
why,
look like a joke.
Which is why comedy was such a saving grace for me because mm-hmm. it was like, oh no, I'm in on it.
Yeah, right.
You know, it
right,
was
right.
like I could drive the car instead of being this person who was vulnerable and pure and out there in earnest and people were like, ha ha ha.
Yeah.
You know, and so it feels like protective and good
right.
to yeah. be like, I see.
Yeah.
And Amanda
and
can,
I make fun of myself and it's all a part of that.
Amanda can quip with the best of them.
Yes. And I want to ask because we talk about The Voice, you know what I
yes.
mean? We'll text about The Voice.
Yes.
Do you when you watch the shows now, you're like American Idol's coming back, I mean mm-hmm. they definitely changed their identity over
I'm
time
sure.
because you know from William Hung to now.
So this was but that was the other thing I was going to say is that the reason that those people the William Hung should have never happened.
No.
And
the reason that those things happen and those people get
exploited
on the show
yeah.
and you're like what it, you say to yourself like okay but like they're asking for it why they
yeah,
clearly
yeah,
have
yeah.
no talent
they're
making
not
a
well.
Fool out of themselves
yeah.
no because you take a person that is down on their luck looking for a ticket anything
yeah.
right or you take a person that is not well or you know any what have you
or is not even in William Hung's case not even assimilated to the culture
right
like,
right
somebody
right.
who's on the outskirts of mainstream culture or whatever that you take that person in the producer room and you say you're terrific
yep.
you have an amazing voice with and you mean it.
It's cruel.
Evil.
And then you flip it on them and then it's being televised.
It's very cruel.
It's very cruel. It is a it perpetuates a culture of bullying and
yep.
I'm glad that the show was canceled. I cannot believe it's coming back. I know
I don't think anybody can.
I feel like I mean I hope that they've cleaned up their image and that it's going to be a different thing because I think just as a culture we've moved into this place I cannot obviously there's people that don't feel this way but
right.
in pop culture at least I feel like there's a shift towards self-care and being kind and
positive.
That they're positive right
yeah. The Voice I mean you know The Voice is still a reality show but
they don't humiliate people
no. And even the people who don't move forward they leave with dignity
yes
they take
Every
those
time.
People seriously they're all vocalists which is why the show is better is because you're watching people with talent compete.
Yeah.
And not people who are looking to be on TV.
Exactly.
Like as a first and foremost priority.
There
yeah.
are so many people who are on Idol who I think just wanted to get in front of a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't happen on The Voice. The Voice has a vetting process. They have a casting process. They have a casting director. They have somebody that reaches out to already established artists and says, do you want to come audition for The Voice? Or not necessarily artists who are getting a lot of attention but are out there, you know, they'll reach out to those people.
Right, right.
So I feel warmer feelings for The Voice because I feel like that show is trying to help these artists.
And it's about mentorship and it's about teaching them.
It's about what it says, which is The Voice. Mm-hmm. Idol's mission... First of all, Idol started in England, didn't it?
Yeah, Pop Idol.
There is an approach to
reality TV. Television.
There's that was, I think, co-opted and done here and
not well.
It not well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So would you ever watch?
Lot, but yeah.
No.
I agree.
Yeah. Would you ever yes. audition for The Voice?
Ugh. Yeah, every time I watch,
yeah,
I have that same thing that happened after my freshman year where mm-hmm. I was like,
I can do it.
I could do it. Like, I know I could.
You place yourself there.
I place, of course. And then they'll have like a, not a confessional, but a talking head moment or like a moment where I'll see the inner workings of it.
Yep, the reality showness.
And it just turns me off.
Yeah, right.
And I just have the past trauma of like putting myself out. And I know they wouldn't make me look
bad or stupid,
but that the element of like I'm performing self.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no.
Really freaks me out.
So freaky. And also, don't take this to be simplistic in that same way of like you got to laugh at it. But I think just with you being able to sort of see that in the moment, I think that's a sign that you've taken the trauma and like you're wearing it as an armor now because it's like, oh, no, I'm not going to put myself in that dangerous position ever again because I know what that is.
And like people always there's a tendency to like let the wounds be there, like be open, be vulnerable. Yeah, yeah. But like the shield of being able to like poke at it and laugh at myself has been so much more healing for me than there's therapy to be had and like I am processing this and it's all there, but like I like taking the power away from it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people will see this tape, this audition tape, and be like, whatever, like, okay, fine.
It's always going to be a bigger deal to you.
Right. And so sometimes I have this self-conscious moment of like, oh God, am I like swan-songing about this thing that's like actually not that big a deal? But
no, but I think it's important to share because I think it reveals something about something that we all bought into big time.
Yep, and we still are.
And we still are. Yeah. You got to imagine they sign a similar contract at The Voice.
Oh, sure.
They don't go through with it the way that they did.
Or I'll have moments watching The Voice where I'm like, how organic are these times where the judges
quip.
Are like,
that's
I don't
always
know.
Like whenever I'm whenever I'm laughing at Adam and Blake fucking doing whatever they're doing, Henry always is like jokes and he's like always like, wow, they're so funny. And I was just like, yeah. And
John
I catch myself making fun of let's hear another song.
Sure.
Let's talk about this next song you're gonna do by famous contemporary singer Adele.
This song I feel like this song had such a moment, and I really love her. I just think there's something really special about her as an artist. For me, it was that moment at the Grammys. Was that the Grammys?
Well, what happened?
When she did the tribute
to...
I'm gonna look so bad now.
Oh, whatever. It doesn't matter. But it was you.
She's got so many amazing performances.
He died. George Michael.
Oh, George Michael.
Oh, yes. And she said when she stopped it and said, "I have to do it right for him."
That was
yeah.
the most compelling thing I've ever seen a singer do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because there's a pop star do.
Right.
Yeah.
The facade drops.
Because that also and she's also like raising a huge middle finger to like the TV producers and I'm just like, fuck you,
totally.
I'm going to do this again. Yeah.
And because to quote sort of Henry's mantra, like none of it's real. Nothing's real.
Yeah.
Nothing is real.
Henry Kapersky, yeah.
Like the charade of celebrity and just the whole thing, especially with these singers, these mm-hmm. vocalists. I mean, like 5'2". Like I was so moved by that.
Yeah.
And like, and I just watched Elaine Stritch's documentary the documentary about Elaine Stritch, and I'm really fascinated with this right now. This like this thing of singer in the spotlight. It's really interesting. So anyway, I
have to send you this New York Times article about Miles and Whitney.
Please.
Yeah. Anyway.
All that stuff. Amy Winehouse. Like all yeah, that. Yeah. Michigas. I'm so Michigas. Interested in that. Yiddish word for insanity. yes. Yeah, so I love Adele. This song was like a huge moment, I think, on her album 25. And I did a little cover of it at one point. And this is just like kind of fun to know. I had an ex shoot and record that. Mm-hmm. And it was this, like, I had friends calling me who knew that, who were like, how dare you be so meta?
Yeah, I know. That was crazy.
Because like, the song is all about that relationship.
All right, let's hear it. It's When We Were Young.
Everybody loves the things you do, from the way you talk to the way you move. Everybody here is watching you, 'cause you feel like home. You're like a dream come true. But if by chance you're here alone, can I have a moment before I go? 'Cause I've been by myself all night long, hoping you're someone I used to know. You look like a movie, you sound like a song. My God, this reminds me of when we were young. Let me photograph you in this light, in case it is the last time that we might be exactly like we were before we realized we were sad of getting old. It made us restless. It was just like a movie. It was just like a song. So scared to face my fears. Nobody told me that you'd be here. And I swore you moved overseas. That's what you said when you left me. You still look like a movie. You still sound like a song. My God, this reminds me of when we were young. Let me photograph you in this light, in case it is the last time that we might be exactly like we were before we realized we were sad of getting old. It made us restless. It was just like a movie. It was just like a song. When we were young. When we were young. When we were young. When we were young. It's hard to win me back. Everything just takes me back to when you were there. When you were there. And a part of me keeps holding on, just in case it hasn't gone. I guess I still care. Do you still care? It was just like a movie. It was just like a song. My God, this reminds me of when we were young. It is the last time that we might be exactly like we were before we realized we were sad of getting old. It made us restless. Oh, I'm so mad I'm getting old. It made me restless. It was just like a movie. It was just like a song when we were young.
Wow. That's, oh my God. I just held my breath for that entire time.
It's just such a good song. It's such a good performance of the song. Thank you, Henry.
Yeah.
Oh man. You. So here's what I think we should do. I think we should do I Don't Think So, Honey. Oh, I think we're all going to do an I Don't Think So, Honey. Okay. All four of us. And then I think we'll do one more song to close it out.
Yes.
That sounds good?
That sounds great.
That sounds great to me.
I love it.
This is so good. Okay. So I Don't Think So, Honey. By the way, thank you guys so much for coming out to all of our shows that we've had.
Oh my goodness. They've been so fun.
Yeah. Culture was a big success, and thank you guys so much for that. And I Don't Think So, Honey at the Bell House, that was like a dream come true for my best friend Bowen and I. And those episodes are going to be out in a couple weeks. And here we go. So Bowen Yang, do you want to do your I Don't Think So, Honey? Do you have something?
I have something. I have the seed, the kernel of something. Yeah,
he's got the kernel, bitch.
I've got the kernel.
All right. So this is Bowen Yang's I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey. People who don't fucking like talking about the weather, or they think that that's that it's like shitty small talk. You guys, the weather is the thing that binds us all together. It's the
that's
great
beautiful.
Equalizer.
Yes.
It's something that we all share in common. It's a shared experience the world over, the community over, at least. I want to talk about how it's rainy outside, or how there's a dew in the air this morning, isn't there, in the elevator? Look, don't crucify me for wanting to talk meteorology, bitch!
30 seconds.
I don't think so, honey. You know what? I just want to make small talk with you because it's an entry point, and then I can get to know more about your fucking small business, you fucking ding-dong. Fuck you. I don't think so, honey, people who don't like talking about the weather.
15 seconds.
You know what?
You gotta keep going, bitch.
It's the great equalizer, as I said. And it bears repeating, bitch. So listen, talk to me about how it's warm in Portland this time of year. And, you know, actually, you know, the Poconos aren't as cold as you would think December.
That's 1 minute. Yeah. That was beautiful. And you know what? Sometimes I don't think so, honey. It can just be 39 seconds.
But no, it can't. And I mean,
but we're in such a, again, I'll say it, dropped in place.
I'm so
because
dropped
I love the vibe of this episode because this
beautiful.
Vibe is very laid back, and we're all feeling very comfortable, and we've just been truly sung beautiful music.
Our souls
and
have been salved.
HPJ is sitting here enjoying as well, and we are very gagged. All right, so now I'll do mine.
This is Matt Rogers' I Don't Think So, Honey, and his time starts now.
I don't think so, honey, Ed Sheeran. I don't think so, honey, Ed Sheeran. You want to know what? You are the third most fuckable Ed. Ed Harris is number one. Mr. Ed, the talking horse, is number two, and then there's you, bitch. You want to believe in the Illuminati? Look at Ed Sheeran and understand that that man is famous, okay? Some dark magic is going into that. Yes, can he plung-a-plung-plung on the guitar and do something? Okay, yeah, that's fine, but you know what? It certainly doesn't excuse him rapping. Yes, I said rapping on the new Taylor Swift album Reputation, and no, it is not acceptable for Taylor herself, but you know what? She can kind of do it. Ed Sheeran cannot do it, and I said to Taylor, well, I never said this to her, but I would say this to her. I'd say, bitch, listen, it's one thing if you want to appropriate the house down, but don't drag your friend into it, because now I know what she's doing. I don't think so, honey, Taylor Swift. She wants to make sure she is using him as a shield. I don't think so, honey, Ed Sheeran. I'm not going to make a Hobbit joke, but I guess I just did. I don't think so, honey, Ed Sheeran.
And that's 1 minute. Oh, my God.
I'm so mad about plung-a-plung-plung.
Plung-a-plung-plung.
Honestly,
the fact that
he's number one.
He's starting to talk about having sex in his songs, and I don't want to fucking picture that.
Do you know how many streams? Do you know how many streams Shape of You has on Spotify?
Like 100 billion.
1.5 billion.
No way.
Which is crazy.
Damn.
Yeah. There is something happening there.
I've had such
it's Illuminati.
It's Illuminati magic. You're right. You're right.
And dark magic.
He appropriated, all of his albums are like plus, minus, divide, whatever. He appropriated math from my fucking people.
Yeah.
So he appropriated that too. Fuck Ed Sheeran.
We're not into it.
Oh my God.
All right, no. So now is Henry's time.
Henry.
Okay.
Henry has, he wanted to do it. I don't think so, honey. He's going to get this moment to shine right now.
Okay, Henry,
he, of course, did one of the great I Don't Think So, Honeys at the first
dancing.
I Don't Think So, Honey Live, which was I Don't Think So, Honey Dancing.
Thank you.
Yes. Classic. And now we're going to have I Don't Think So, Honey, Henry Kapersky. His time starts now.
I Don't Think So, Honey, Katrina Rogers, mother of Matt Rogers.
Oh my God.
How dare.
You are a loving, sweet, generous woman, and we're probably a great mother, but you did not teach your son how to recycle. He does not know the difference between paper and plastic and metal and tin. Maybe he doesn't know how to read, and that's fine. That's nothing to be ashamed of, but I think he does know how to read, okay? And I even labeled 3 different bins, paper and cardboard and then plastic, oh, aluminum, and et cetera, and then seconds. Trash. Our super, when we moved into our apartment, said, it's very important that you separate these things. Oh. He looked us both in the eyes and asked that. And I've done a lot to make sure that happens, including label everything. Also, Matt, take seconds. The trash out every once in a while, like maybe at least once a month, please. Sorry, this is about Katrina. You are so loving and beautiful and wonderful and funny. 5 seconds. And you gave so much of that to your son, but teach him how to recycle.
Oh my God, and that's why.
Oh, you won't have to deal with me for much longer. Also, I'm sorry, but where does styrofoam go?
Trash. You can't recycle it.
You can't recycle it.
Oh, okay.
Katrina.
You don't take out the trash?
I do sometimes.
That's my worst pet. One of my worst pet peeves is when my roommates don't take out the trash. I have to do everything.
I do sometimes.
I do sometimes. I feel really ambushed by the like Matt Henry honesty of this episode.
But don't you think you don't think it's beautiful? You don't think it's wonderful?
It's so beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It's an exemplary, you know, sort of dynamic.
This is the moment for Amanda Shekman's I Don't Think So, Honey.
Oh, my God.
Here we go.
Now this is the moment.
Not knowing I had to do one of these until right now.
Imagine.
Okay.
Right. This is Amanda's I Don't Think So, Honey. Her time starts now.
I don't think so, honey. People that think it's funny or interesting to talk about how short I am.
Ah!
Talked about before. I was born, bitch. I went to the doctor. I know my goddamn height. When I reached 5'0", that was a big goddamn moment for me, okay? That was huge. I was 4'11 for so long, I thought I'm never going to reach 5. Now you're going to take my 5'0" and take that away from me and talk about how short I am? When guys do this, I want to fucking kill them. Use my head as an armrest one more time. I fucking dare you. I fucking dare you. There are so many more interesting things to talk about.
Seconds.
I am a really complex person. There's a lot that you can learn about me. But when people feel uncomfortable, they go to the most simplistic thing,
yes,
which is, you know, actually, for the most part, you can't really comment on a person's appearance, but for some reason, height is fair fucking game. And I want to talk
seconds.
About the tall people, too, because the people that talk about how tall you are, that's fucking dumb also. Don't talk about how tall someone is or how short someone is because you're somewhere in the middle.
Five
like,
seconds.
How good for you. Don't talk about my height, bitch.
Yes!
That's 1 minute.
See, you know what? That was great, and that was culture.
And that was culture, and
you're 100%
just
right.
Uncovered something new.
Big time.
That it's fair game. Height is fair game when you talk about someone's
from
appearance.
From now on, talking about someone's height and objectifying it is canceled. We cancel it. In fact, it's rule number 91 of culture. Talking about someone's height and objectifying them is canceled.
Oh my God, delicious.
Now I want to leave on a fun note. We've had two kind of like emotional ballads.
I know. I'm having this problem with my show.
We are going to sing Dangerous Woman by Ariana Grande.
Yeah.
And we're going to go out with this. So my name is Matt Rogers.
My name is Bowen Yang.
And we've had on our show, accompanying Amanda, is Henry Kopersky.
And we've had the amazing Amanda Shechtman.
Yes.
And here at the Duplex on December 4th.
7 p.m. Amanda Shechtman hates to sing. Get your tickets or you're going to be missing out. So here we go. Dangerous Woman by Amanda Shechtman.
Don't need permission. Made my decision to test my limits. Cause it's my business, God as my witness. Started what I finished. Don't need no hold up. Taking control of this kind of moment. I'm locked and loaded, completely focused. My mind is open. All that you got. Skin to skin, oh my God, don't you stop, boy. Something about you makes me feel like a dangerous woman. Something about you. To prove and I'm bulletproof and know what I'm doing. The way we're moving, like introducing us to a new thing. I wanna savor, save it for later, the taste of flavor. Cause I'm a taker, cause I'm a giver. It's only nature, I live for danger. Oh. that you got skin to skin. Oh my God, don't you stop, boy. Oh yeah, something about you makes me feel like a dangerous woman. Something that you wanna be like that. Bad girls underneath like that. You know how I'm feeling inside. Something about all girls wanna be like that. Bad girls underneath like that. You know how I'm feeling inside. Something about you. Bad girls underneath like that. You know how I'm feeling inside.
Yes!
Yes!
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.